You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome to Engage with Andy Bush, broadcast live on voiceamerica.com at noon ET on Fridays and posted on andrewbush.com. In this segment, we will talk what's next for Congress, the outlook for trade agreements, and the looming debt ceiling problem. Joining us to discuss this and more is Douglas Holtz-Eakin, president of American Action Forum, and that can be found at americanactionforum.org. Now, Doug's held many roles in government, so don't hold it against him, but he's so bright, from being the chief economist of the President's Council of Economic Advisor to the director of the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. He joins us from D.C. Doug, welcome back to Engage.
Thanks for having me back on.
All right. The DHS saga appears to be finally over for the Republicans, and they've really taken a hit to their credibility on McConnell's promise to be able to govern. What's next for Republican leadership, and where can they rehab their reputation?
Well, I think you gave the bookends at the top. One end of this is the TPA, which would be something that the White House very much wants, so it's bipartisan in character. It's something that is traditionally pretty difficult for Congress to do, and so getting it over the finish line will be a genuine legislative accomplishment. This isn't something that's automatic. And I think that's one place they'll do it. At the back end is the debt limit. That's also traditionally a difficult thing to do, and Republicans have struggled in recent years to develop a single strategy that they all agree on in approaching debt limit increases. So that'll be a test out there toward August or maybe after. The latest CBO reports say they can wait until the fall to do that. But in between, there's a lot of stuff. And I think next up and worth watching is how they do in passing budgets. The House and the Senate are going to begin marking up those budgets a week after next, and then they have two brand-new budget chairs, Tom Price in the House, Mike Enzi in the Senate. Public reports are they've been talking every week and are on the same page, and so there's a chance there to do something that really hasn't happened in a while, which is pass a budget out of the House, pass out of the Senate, agree on a common budget, and apply it to the Congress as a whole.
Yeah, that's something that certainly has been lacking over the term of President Obama. I think they just last year was the first time they actually had a budget, or maybe the Murray-Ryan budget agreement was the first time that something really got done.
That was it.
Yeah.
And the Congressional Budget Office will be coming out tomorrow with its revised baseline projections that essentially tells the public what happens if we go on autopilot, don't change anything. And then next week they'll put out their analysis of what the president has proposed. Those are usually the kickoffs for budget deliberations in the Congress. Take a look at where you are and what the president's proposing to do, and then develop your formulation for what's next.
Well, let's talk about trade first. Where does this legislation to provide the president, President Obama with trade promotion authority, where does this stand, and will it get done?
At the moment, they are, I think, struggling to get it done. No question about that. Mm-hmm. As I said before, it's always hard. In the Bush White House, back in 2002, it passed the House with one vote. I mean, this is not something that's automatic for Republicans or Democrats.
Right.
To an economist, it seems like a no-brainer. You want to provide the president with the maximum ability to negotiate effectively. So giving an ironclad guarantee that you will not amend the trade agreement when it comes back is the core of TPA authority. It's also the Congress's ability to constrain the president in his negotiating. I mean, the legislation can set up all sorts of observation points where the Congress gets briefings, can go to the negotiations, can limit the kinds of agreements they can come to. Mm-hmm. So it's in the Congress's interest to do this.
Right.
But as with anything of this sort of scale, you've got some Republicans who are just too wary of the president and what he would do given this authority. They're not going to get on board. There are a lot of progressives who don't believe in trade flatly, who think it's just bad for Americans, and they won't get on board. And so there's going to have to be a coalition of Republicans and Democrats in the middle that gets this over the finish line.
Well, one of the things that I thought was positive this week was the fact that moderate Democrats released an economic plan that included trade. And to me, that's a wonderful component of it. But what worries me is that given that the Warren wing, and you just brought it up, the Warren wing of the Democratic Party is against this, won't these same Democrats abandon support for TPA once the volume gets turned up by Warren?
Well, they may. I mean, it's a risk. But there are there are some things to remember on both sides of the aisle. So for the Republicans who are skeptical, they need to remember that this is trade promotion authority for the president, not for President Obama. It would survive after he's left office for the next president. Indeed, the negotiations right now are being conducted on what's left of the authority under George Bush. And so,
how typically long are these TPA agreements? Are they like 10 years or what?
These are like 5 years.
5 years, so okay.
The authority that gave us, you know, Panama, Colombia, South Korea, also launched the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Trade and Investment Partnership with the Europeans. So, okay. If you're a skeptical Republican, you have to think past Obama. If you're a Democrat who's wary of the economic implications, remember, these agreements are not just about economics. As much as I might believe in the power of the economic argument, it was the desire of the Western nations to develop a cohesive strategy against the Soviet Union that really drove the post-war GATT process that brought us to WTO. It was the desire to have a functional democracy on our southern border that brought NAFTA, right, as much as the economics. And, you know, with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this is a coalition that can share economic and other values in the face of China trying to dominate the region. And that's an important part of the consideration. And so I think the more broadly you understand the benefits, the more likely you are to vote yes.
Wow, that's a really great point. You know, I hadn't thought about that. And certainly, you know, it's interesting because that's, to some extent, that's a little bit of Russia's strategy to put the band back together with their satellite countries and all the problems that they're causing in the Ukraine, obviously, and Crimea, is to force those into a trade pact. That's really what the whole Ukrainian thing started at, was to get a free trade pact done. So to your point, which is an excellent one, and I hadn't really thought about it, but it's a wonderful way to make stronger connections with our partners in other countries and to offset some of the drive by countries like Russia and China to dominate the region.
Absolutely. I think this is, you know, something that needs to be stressed. Certainly with China, the U.S. will never be successful in any bilateral showdown with China. They simply will not lose to the U.S. And so if you want to be successful in getting them to change their ways, multilateral approaches, and this is 40% of the world's production in this one trade agreement. This is a very powerful block. You need those kinds of things.
No doubt. Well, not to
one
be the pessimist.
On that, which I think
go ahead.
Are not thinking about is, if you look inside the numbers, the U.S. runs a trade deficit. People know that, but it runs a trade surplus with those countries with which it has trade agreements, and it runs a deficit with the rest. And so the notion that automatically trade agreements mean we get harmed is just wrong.
Wow, great point. Good selling point, too, obviously. So something to keep in mind if anyone does talk to their congressman or senator, that's for sure. And what the point I was going to say was, like, look, pessimistically, if TPA can't get done, what does that mean for something bigger like the debt ceiling budget, those things that have some importance to them? Obviously, it's a little bit down the road, but to me, it seems like this is such an important domino to go for not only President Obama, the Republicans, and moderate Democrats.
There are two different kinds of things that have to get done. One are those things that, you know, congressional Republicans can control with their majorities, and the budget resolution is on that list. So that's going to be strictly a question of, can the Republicans agree on the basic outline of what the fiscal future should look like? There, I think there's only one major hurdle to be crossed, and that is how much money to spend on the Defense Department. There are two very powerful blocks, one of which are the defense hawks, who believe the Pentagon is severely underfunded and our national security is at risk, The other are the budget hawks who say, look, we cut a deal to have these caps. We're not going to spend more than the caps. They have to resolve that. But that's a Republican issue, and they'll have to do it internally. The second kind of issues are those that have to be a law. So you have to get it through the House, through the Senate, and have the president sign it. TTA is on that list, and it's actually a pretty big one on that list. The other things that are on that list, right up to the debt limit, are pretty small. We have, you know, patching the payments to doctors under Medicare, fixing the highway trust fund, doing the appropriations process. You know, these are all things that I think they can establish track record of success by doing, and then you get to the debt limit, and that's been a tough one, and that'll be a real test.
Well, one last question before I let you go. From an optimistic point of view, I'm going to end this positively.
Right.
For a change, I know it's so hard to do that when you're in D.C., Doug.
So remember, I'm in Washington, and they're forecasting 8 inches of snow, so the apocalypse is here.
Can I just say, I my heart bleeds for you. Living in Chicago, it's terrible, but I will tell you this. We're going from 0 degrees this week to 50 degrees next week, and I hope it's not a complete, you know, Noah build the ark flood for all the snow to melt. So
that'll
be coming for you as well. So with that in mind, what would you like to see to indicate serious progress for a Paul Ryan-led effort on tax reform? Just give me like three top things, dominoes that you'd like to see fall in place to feel like you're getting some momentum building for what's going to happen with tax reform.
I think the major things would be, number one, to have the Democrats on the committee engaged in the process early. That didn't happen as much with Dave Camp as I think he had hoped. What he ended up with was a draft that even the committee never took a vote on. And so you need to get the Democrats on the committee in there. Second thing you need is White House leadership. There's just no way that this happens without the White House actually pushing Democrats and using some political capital to get it done. And the third is public education. Honestly, I don't think the average American understands that a better corporate tax code will be good for middle America. They don't understand the middle class works in corporations, needs to sell around the globe, is at a competitive disadvantage, and is being harmed by a bad tax code. As soon as they understand that, the whole thing will be easier.
All right, tax reform, TPA, Republican reputations, and snowfall in Washington, D.C. We got it all today from Douglas Holtz-Eakin, president of American Action Forum. Thanks for coming on, Doug.
Appreciate it, Andy. Thank you.
All right, you bet. Remember, folks, this show is live on Fridays at noon ET and is posted on andrewbush.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Andy Bush.
Thank you for tuning in this week to Engage with Andy Bush. We'll be back again next Friday at 9 a.m. in the West, 12 noon in the East on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll have more insights and discussions then.